All right. It's time for a little podcast action. What do you say, Reg? Yeah? Cool. How you doing today? Battling the heat like the rest of us? Oy, this is not my weather at all. Ugh. What happened to that beautiful May and early June we had when it was 60 and 70? That was my weather. This. Ugh. What is August going to be like? Uy. Yeah, I know. That's a podcast. I know. I should save that, right? No, we got something else on tap today. Good. Get your trigger finger ready. My instrument sounds fine. I'm feeling good. Let's get on with the festivities. You ready to go? Put it in the books. 476. Oh, 476. The country was founded, or established in 1776. And this is kind of 4th of July weekend. Wow. Cool. Huh, Reggie? Neat. Okay, I can see how excited you are. All right, here we go. 476, star smile strong, get ready. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, it's podtastic that you listen every week. That's just podtastic. But what's almost as equally podtastic is you telling people that your favorite podcast is, in fact, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And convey to them that it should be theirs, too. Do the best arm twisting you can. Hopefully you don't have to twist their arms too hard. That arm twisting and devotion is much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, and you have been liking it for years on end, more than nine, in fact, you can always go back and enjoy those times all over again by going to WGNRadio.com, going to the podcast section, hitting the prompt for this podcast, and finding dozens and dozens and dozens of podcasts from the future, from the past, I'm sorry. It's always good to hear where we've been so you know where we're going. We've been around now for 9 years, and with this podcast, 476 episodes, 476. Before we started the podcast, I was talking to my producer here, Reggie, and I was saying, oh, it dawned on me, 476, that's a big number. 76 always rings a bell if you were born here in the USA. Thank you, Bruce Springsteen. Because we just got finished with 4th of July weekend, and we were celebrating 1776. And of course, next year, 250th birthday of this this little idea called the United States of America. 250. I'm happy. A little when I realize what it means, a little sad, but still happy. That yes, I was around for the bicentennial when this country turned 200, and that was a word. I was young at the time. We had to look that word up. I think a lot of people in the country did. That word wasn't as immediately known as it was throughout a whole year leading up to July 4th. 1976, all of a sudden we were hearing about bicentennial. I remember looking it up in the dictionary going, well, what does that even mean? And that was quite a celebration here in the country, and even a year leading up to it. So like right around now, you know, a year or so leading up to the bicentennial, there were several kind of programs to get people either educated or re-educated and re-familiarized with the beginning of our country dating back to the Revolution. And before that, when, the establishment of the 13 colonies and the whole history leading up to then the Revolutionary War and then the war itself. And then, of course, the actual establishment of the country. But it was that Declaration of Independence in 1776 that started the ball rolling. And, next year, 250. In fact, CBS, the network, used to have something called the Bicentennial Minute, which, of course, as it continued on for more than a year, became, a little kind of... butt of a joke. Oh, another Bicentennial Minute, because it basically used to precede, if I remember correctly, as I said, I was a young kid, but I remember watching. I used to watch CBS all the time. They had some of the best shows on in the 70s. And I believe it started, the little Bicentennial Minute used to be just before the primetime programming began each night. So here in the Central Time Zone, for instance, it would be 7 o'clock, and right before the show would start, there, right the minute before that, literally, it was a Bicentennial Minute. There was this minute of a little quick little bite talking about a specific person or event or happening or whatever you want to call it that was specific to. The beginnings of this country, leading up to, of course, the Revolutionary War and the Declaration of Independence. And so there were talks, insight, little quick nuggets, very pre-internet kind of interesting things when you think about it. But just today was there's the battle of this, or there is this person, and it certainly highlighted some of the big names that we know that came into play for the United States Revolution and birth of the country. But they also tried to signal in on some other people that maybe were behind the scenes or just never got some of their contributions. And so it was a whole year of that, and it was kind of a cool thing, and it was educational. As I said, people used to make fun of them toward the end because it was another Bicentennial Minute. But I really think it was kind of a cool idea. I wish that, we've got so many outlets now. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't picked up that gauntlet. We'll see. Maybe somebody will. But yeah, the Bicentennial Minute, that is definitely a blast from the past in many ways. But yeah, I remember the Bicentennial. It was a huge celebration, as you'd expect. And there was a lot of pride, even though... the country had just come out of a very difficult time with the whole Watergate scandal that had been going on for several years and ended with the resignation for the first time in U.S. history of an American president, Richard Nixon, in 1974. Of course, the Vietnam War had been going on for more than 10 years. It officially ended in 1975, finally, without much of a... real resolution per se, a very difficult time in this country's history, and especially when war is concerned, and it really helped divide the country in many ways. And so actually the Bicentennial was a nice timing, because there was so many things that had been dividing the country politically, militarily, socially. Does any of this sound familiar? But we had a chance to rally and be united, at least for a day or so, to celebrate our birthday. And it was quite a big celebration. And there was, I don't know how long it really lasted in terms of unification, but at least for a couple of days. It's going to be very interesting, in my view, to see how next year, when we celebrate the 250th anniversary of this country, 50 years later, President Trump is planning a huge birthday party, as well he should. But this country is so divided, and there is such a hatred by so many for President Trump and his policies that I wonder what this birthday is going to be like, what this birthday celebration. You already saw the controversy that was surrounding the 250th birthday of the military when President Trump had a military parade, and you saw how dividing and polarizing that was. And of course, many Democrats were complaining about it, and Republicans, of course, were praising it. And it's going to be interesting to see next July 4th. There's going to be a huge birthday party. You know that. They're already planning it. Huge pomp and circumstance. 250 years of this American experiment. It's certainly worth celebrating and commemorating. But given how this country is right now, that's going to be the interesting story. Will people put aside their differences and celebrate this? Right now, there's many people in this country that don't celebrate this country at all. And so I think it's going to be a very different tone. It was very patriotic 50 years ago. Despite all the craziness and division, the patriotism overrode that. And the country did celebrate the bicentennial, and everybody felt good. There were flags. There was a lot of good spirit and patriotism in the air to celebrate that bicentennial, since there was such a big lead up to it. And we'll see what kind of lead up is within the next year that they have planned and building that anticipation. But today, especially thanks to social media and so many other things, it's going to be very interesting to see, will there be just as many celebrations and protests about the country? I don't know. We'll see. But that's for another podcast a few months in the future, right? That's a year away. Just remember where you heard it first here. On July 7th, 2025. Remember who was the first to bring this up, okay? Just remember that. What I wanted to talk about is something that I have on occasion not gotten into very deeply, but you know, as I often digress into other little subjects throughout the course of a podcast, I've touched on this idea, and now once again, I'm bringing it back because it's really starting to come to fruition, and it's becoming something very real. At first, it was just think about this. And now the think about this is starting to become a reality. And you say, well, what the heck are you talking about, Jim? Well, hold on. I've got some time here. I'll get to it. One of the things that has been very interesting about good old rock and roll. I mean, I'm a rock and roll fan, big rock and roll music fan. I like all types of music, as I've said many times here. In fact, just talking about my CD collection last week, I said I prided myself on having a record and CD collection that spanned all musical genres from punk to Pavarotti. And but you know, at the heart of it, yeah, you know, I was born during the rock and roll era. I was in my late teens and early 20s during the heights of MTV, when rock and pop really was so dominant in the culture. Even though I was a little kid in the 70s, I was into music at an early age. And obviously it was pop and rock was the dominating, the dominating genre of the time. Now that certainly has changed. There's no question about that. Right now we are in a female pop diva / hip hop world. There's no question about that. It's been that way, I would argue, for probably at least 30 years or so, really, when you think about it. Going back to the rise of the female pop diva in the mid-90s with your Britney Spears and your Christina Aguilera's, and Mariah Carey already was a star, but she certainly rose to that occasion in kind of the mid-90s. The female divas started to take over. And even in the alt rock world, the female rock star as well as a pop divas, you know, like your Sheryl Crow's and your Alanis Morissettes and your Sarah McLachlans and your Joan Osbornes and people like that, the whole the Lilith Fair era, if you will. People may not remember that, but back in the 90s, there was something called the Lilith Fair, which as that whole idea that we now have all these festival and multi-act shows like Lollapalooza and things like that, the Lilith Fair was all female artists going out on the road, and it did very well and was around for several years. So we're definitely in an era now with, you know, obviously Taylor Swift and Olivia Rodrigo, and I mean there's so many to even, you know, Chapel Roan. I mean the names now, it's a fully, if you look at the Billboard singles chart or even the album chart, Lady Gaga, I mean there's a million of them. It's mostly women. If you watch the Grammy Awards, I was watching the Grammys on and off last year, and I joked to my wife, I said, do men make music anymore? So there's no question that female pop diva acts, obviously Beyonce is the leader of the pack. Yes, I know it's Beyonce. I know it's Beyonce. I know that. It's a joke. I used to call Dua Lipa. The funny thing is, when Dua Lipa just started to get popular, I didn't know what kind of staying power she'd have. I mean, now she's one of those divas, the leading pop divas of the world. But at the time, you hear this name, Dua Lipa. And I, you know, trying to just, you know, be a little sarcastic and kind of show my age in a funny way, I called her Oompa Loompa. I don't mean Oompa Loompa. I mean Dua Lipa. You know, I mean, that was kind of my joke. Well, the joke was on me. No question about that. Dua Lipa has become one of the biggest stars in the world. So my little Oompa Loompa joke, I think, was funny at the time. But, you know, Dua Lipa got the last laugh on me. No question about that. And, of course, the hip-hop rap world. Hip-hop, if you look, you're Kendrick Lamar's and everyone else, it is rap and hip-hop. And the female divas that dominate. If you watch the Grammys, if you watch the American Music Awards, if you watch anything that deals with the popular music today, it's female artists and it's rap and hip hop artists, no question. Rock is on its last legs, and it's very hard for me to say that. There were so many, you know, rock has gone through so many eras and periods where they were paranoid. There's a chip on the rock and roll shoulder. You know, when it first started in the 50s, it was scoffed on by the mainstream and by the establishment, by the people like Frank Sinatra and that, and Elvis Presley, you know, was looked at with some, you know, the acts and popular singers and performers at the time, they didn't initially think much of rock and roll and even Elvis Presley. They made fun of him. They thought it would be a fad. But when they saw the popularity that he had, the draw he had on television, the record, the amount of records he sold, the frenzy that he created, even though they didn't understand it, even though they didn't think the music had quality, they were laughing at his gyrations, they made fun of him, they didn't have much respect for the music. They thought he was a passing fad. But as he stuck around for a couple of years, they could not deny the popularity and the money and the numbers that guy was generating. And to the point where then it went from mocking and joking to respect. Might not have liked the music still, but they respected Elvis, and the guy had an amazing voice, there's no question about that, and had, you know, just a natural charisma. And so they respected those aspects to the point where Frank Sinatra even sang with Elvis and more of the established performers of the day at first may have made fun of him, but then they had to say, hey, I don't get it. I don't understand it. It's not my thing, but you have to admit, the guy's doing something right. And rock has always gone through that. There were, you know, in the early 50s, there was a song called Rock and Roll is Here to Stay, because everybody thought it was a fad. You know, the Who, then later in the 70s, Long Live Rock, I Need It Every Night. You know, rock always, there was all these proclamations that rock and roll will never die. Rock and roll is here to stay. Long live rock. They there were anthems about it because there was this paranoia. They never had the respect. And finally, as I said, it wasn't until the 80s when MTV broadcast music around the globe 24 hours visually. And I've said many times how we are visual animals, and that changed everything. And not only did it give rise to a new era of people in the 80s, but what it really did was help establish and actually anoint many of those from the 60s and 70s who had great popularity within the niche of rock and roll. But as rock and roll then became the established music of the time, and those older artists who once dominated, like your Sinatras and people like that, got older and faded away, rock then firmly established itself. But then ironically, now, 40 years later, it is just like the big band and crooner era of the 30s and 40s and early 50s before Elvis. And that's what's happened. And certainly in the last 30 years, rock has really diminished. As I said, really, you can almost point to almost the mid-90s. After Kurt Cobain, there was the alt-rock grunge thing continued for a while, but it was really overcome then by the boy bands, like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. And the female divas, as I mentioned before, and then the explosion of rap and hip-hop. And that pretty much still defines pop today. Rock is literally on its last leg, and it's sad. Those of us who grew up with it, we will always love it. We still go see it. We still will pay several hundred dollars to see our aging legendary rock stars do whatever they still can. We still buy their albums when they come out, even though they get very little, if any, radio play in terms of new music. There's nowhere to play it. There's no market for it. But rock and roll fans, because it becomes such a part of their lifestyle, of the youth counterculture generation of the 60s and 70s and even 80s, music was so important and so unifying. It's not as unifying as it still is, but it's a different kind of unification because of, the digital music and the file sharing, and that's when things got fragmented. In the 50s and 60s and 70s and even 80s and even in some in the 90s, there was still a music structure in place. Radio played new music. MTV, there were channels by which you got music, and everybody was, it was still communal. There were still people hearing and listening to the same things, but it started to fragment then, and now it's so fragmented. And yes, there's big festivals that people like to go to, but, and that draws people, but aside from someone like Taylor Swift, the people that are filling up those 70 and 80,000 seat stadiums on their own, not with multiple bands, but on their own, are still the legacy rock bands of the baby boomers, your Rolling Stones and your Bruce Springsteens, the bands that are still around, like The Who having a farewell tour, and people like Neil Young and stuff like that. There's not as many as there used to. But there's still a few out there, and rock, the older rock fans have proven that they are loyal. Bruce Springsteen just released a 7-album collection, close to $300 of these albums called the Lost Albums, albums that he had recorded but never released over a, what, almost 40-year period? And, you know, 35-year period, whatever it is. But, you know, and it didn't, it's not selling like to you know, Taylor Swift numbers, but the Bruce Springsteen fans are going out and buying it. There's no question about that. And he still just finished his European tour, filling stadiums still at age, 75, almost 76 years old. But there's no question that rock and roll is really now showing its age, literally and figuratively. There are still classic rock stations that do very well, ratings-wise, because, as I said, there's a huge part of the population that still, loves that music. It's their music. They might be in their 60s and 70s and 80s, but that's their music. And it was an integral part of their growing up and shaping their views. It wasn't just entertainment. In my parents' generation, it was entertainment. And when they got older, they kind of said, well, okay, I don't really do that anymore now. As I said, I when I went up to the attic, I found all these albums, these old albums that my mom had. And I was like, wow, I never saw her play any of these. Because I think that generation looked at, well, you know, we used to go dancing and listen to the big bands and the crooners and all that. But then we got older, we got married, and that was when we were younger. And I'm not saying everybody, I'm generalizing, obviously, but there seemed to be like, well, okay, that was something that we did when we were younger, but now that we don't do that anymore. And that was never the case with the rock and roll generation. But what's interesting now, and I said this several years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago, and as I said, now it's actually becoming a reality. I was saying, wow, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to start to see some of the legendary performers of the last 50 or 60 years passing away. And it's going to be tough for those of us who grew up with that music and still view that music, as I've said, almost like a renaissance kind of music from the 50s, the 60s and 70s. And we've been seeing that. I don't mean to overemphasize the death of Brian Wilson, who died a few months ago, a few weeks ago, but it's clearly having a big effect on me. I'm not some Beach Boy fan. I don't even know if I've ever seen the Beach Boys in concert, to be honest with you. I saw Brian Wilson, but I don't think I've ever saw the, I may have seen them perform, but not like to go to see them specifically. I may have seen them in shows where there were several bands. It's not like I'm a huge, huge Beach Boys fan, a big Brian Wilson fan. But, you know, that whole kind of Beach Boy summer vibe is like the Jimmy Buffett thing. I was never really hugely into that. But Brian Wilson, you know, was such a pivotal creative force in the rock and roll, in the evolution of pop and rock music that we know today, with his impact not only with the Beach Boys and what he did, but then the impact that, as I said before, that the influence that he had on the Beatles and the Beatles had on everyone else and things like that. And the last couple of weeks, I guess I've been talking about Brian Wilson more than I ever expected. I guess I'm a bigger fan, or at least a bigger admirer, or at least I'm looking at Brian Wilson's death as a kind of a pivotal thing. I talked about his death a few weeks ago. Last week, I talked about rediscovering my CD collection because of hunting for a Brian Wilson CDs after his death. And here I am now talking about his death in relation to rock and roll and its impact and some of its biggest influences and biggest pioneers, while hanging on, age is beginning to show its face. And 5 or 10 years ago, I made this comment like, oh, you know, in 10 years, you know, blah, blah, blah is going to be 80 or blah, blah, blah is going to be 75, you know, and, but, you know, you think that way and it, and you sort of say it flippantly. But then that time passes and here we are. And for those of us who are rock music fans and who have lived and breathed this stuff, who have bought the albums, I've been to, I can't even tell you how many concerts I've been to, probably between Elton and everyone else, probably more than 700 concerts. I think a few years ago, I counted all my ticket stubs. I mean, it was such a major part of my life from a little kid and still today. Case in point, I bought that $300 Bruce Springsteen album set. Okay? But now we're starting to see that rock and roll is not immortal. Certainly not those who were so important to its birth and evolution and an elevation into the dominant musical genre for more than 70, 60 years, at least from the 50s to the 90s. I mean, it's at least 40 years. As I said before, then things started to change a little. But there's no question that that the imprint of rock moving forward is going to be more about a music of the past than a music of the future. It's just the way it is. There are very few young rock bands who have picked up the gauntlet and have captured the imagination. There's a few out there, but as I said before, they are overshadowed by far, at least by popularity, radio play, concert draws, record sales, you name it, by female pop stars and hip-hop and rap stars. It's just a brutal truth. We have to look in the deep, dark, truthful mirror, as Elvis Costello once said, and just admit it. And what's keeping rock even alive to whatever extent it is, ironically, are these octogenarians now, these 80-year-olds, late 70s and early 80-year-olds who are still out there. Neil Young just played Glastonbury in England. Rod Stewart. These are all octogenarians. But we're seeing them age. We're seeing their talents decline. And we're seeing their health decline. And it's not their fault. They're still the fact that they're still out there plugging away, and rock has always been a very physical, demanding type of music, especially performing it live. And they're still out there, but we're really starting to come to an end here. And we're starting to see it into the point where, as I said, for somebody that loves to go to concerts, I think at this point, you really have to question when an older act or artist goes out on a tour. You really have to wonder if you're going to see that show, especially if the tickets are sold 6 months in advance or 8 months in advance, or sometimes they're a year in advance. There's a lot of wishful thinking, and sometimes it comes to fruition, but we're seeing now that health and mortality is taking a toll on rock and roll. And I honestly believe that when some of these giants that have still been able to hang around, who are still out there on the road promoting, you know, performing, putting out new albums, which doesn't really matter. They never sell. Nobody pays attention. The younger people don't care. They get a lot of pre-release publicity. Oh, Paul McCartney's got a new album. Oh, Ringo Starr's got a new album. Oh, Paul Simon's got a new album. Oh, Elton John's got a new album. Oh, but, and there's all this hype because, and you know, and the albums get good reviews, part of it are kind of courtesy, legendary reviews. The reviewers are giving them the benefit of the doubt because at the age 70 and 80, the fact that you're still out there being creative and trying to do it, you get extra points for that. But in all, you know, and they may win, you know, the Stones just won a Grammy Award, but I don't know. Is their last album as good as Tattoo You? Some Stones fans may argue that, but at the end of the day, it became, you know, the first sentence, the Stones album was number one. And within 3 or 4 weeks, it was off the charts, completely off the chart. It won the Grammy Award once again, I think more as a courtesy and an honor more of a tribute to them than anything else. But the vast majority of the public that buys records did not buy it. The diehard Stones fans went out the first week and bought it en masse, which kind of manipulated artificially the popularity of it, and it debuted at number one. And then after everyone who wanted it, all the diehard Stones fans who wanted it, bought it and had it, and those tallies were tabulated, and the album went to number one. Well, the next week, it was up to the rest of the record buying world, and they didn't even know who the Rolling Stones were. And I'm just using the Rolling Stones as an example. That's everybody. That's Madonna. That's Bruce Springsteen. That's Elton John. That's The Who. That's anybody. That's just the way it is. And even though rock stars, they're so, you know, that baby boomer, legacy, what they call them now, heritage rock stars, they're so tied to the concept, the creative concept of an album. This 10 to 12, 13, whatever you want to have it, songs that might have some kind of a thread of a theme going through, or this collection of songs by them. They're tied to that format. And yet, for the most part, young people don't really buy albums. They don't listen to an album from top to bottom like we did. They hear songs. They listen to songs. Things are on shuffle. They're not sitting down for 45 minutes or an hour in one sitting. They don't have the attention span to do it. It's a different generation, different stimuli, different, many more, alternatives and options. It's different. But rock stars are just tied to that album concept. And it's the same pattern. It happens every time. I mentioned Elton John's new album with Brandi Carlile came out a few months ago, and the same thing happened. And I knew it was going to happen. I predicted it. There was no great Nostradamus here. Nostradamus. No. It happens with everybody of that age. A lot of hype by the press. Hey, Elton John's got a new album. Woohoo. Okay. A lot of hype. As I said, the music critics of the day, even the younger ones, they give their genuflect. Hey, it's in, and so they always get good reviews, 4 out of 5 stars. Oh, this is one of their better albums since the 70s. No, it wasn't. But, you know, so it gets a lot of hype, a lot of anticipation. The core group of fans like myself, whether you're a Rolling Stones fan, a Who fan, a Springsteen fan, an Elton fan, whatever it is, new album, oh my God, new music. You know, we love the old stuff, but wow, new music, we get all excited. And yeah, we run out and buy them the first week, the first day, still do that. And as I said, but once we buy it, that first week, it's gone. 14-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds don't care there's a new album out, aren't running out to buy it, and really don't even really know who that artist is fully. We think it's like, well, of course you know who that is. No, they don't. Of course you know this song. No, I don't. There's really a disconnect. There's no question about that. So, but those legacy artists, you know, from the 60s and 70s, they're just so tied to that album thing. It's like you might have better response if you just release one song every 4 months or 5 months at a time. But they're so tied to that concept of an album. And it, that, to me, Yes, don't get me wrong. You know, Taylor Swift makes albums. You know, hip-hop, Beyonce, you know, just had her country album, Carter Country. You know, people still buy the albums. Don't get me wrong. But it's not the numbers that there used to be. Born in the USA sold 15 million copies. You know, Michael Jackson's Thriller sold 30 million copies. You don't see that anymore. Those numbers just don't exist anymore. You can get a number one album today by selling 40,000 copies in 1 week. In the 70s and 80s, if you didn't sell 200,000 or 300,000 the first week, it was considered a flop. If it wasn't a gold record within a couple of weeks, it was considered a flop. So the whole record buying industry has changed. Everything has changed. But as I said before, that core group of fans have proven to be very loyal. And even these rock stars have shown to be very committed to the music that they helped create and popularize. Now, there's no doubt that a lot of it has to do with money. And they're out there getting personal trainers and getting Botox and getting hip replacements and whatever it takes, because we, the diehard rock fans, will still go see them, even though they've got diminished talents. In many cases, some people at this point are willing to pay $300 or $400 just to be in the same room as Paul McCartney. Just to be in the same room as Neil Young. Just to be in the same room as Bruce Springsteen. Just to be in the same room as Billy Joel. Just to be in the same room as Paul Simon. But we're now getting to a point where mortality for those individual performers is really beginning to show its face. And I think that when they pass away, they are really the last torch bearers. There's sadly no bands that have that same kind of impact to save rock and roll. There's no 20-year-old band out there right now, rock band, that is dominating the charts. Yes, there's some out there. I'm not saying they're not out there, and you're going to throw some names at me, that's fine. I'm talking about, are they more popular than Taylor Swift? Are they as popular as Chappell Roan? Are they as popular as Kendrick Lamar? Are they as popular as Drake? I mean, are they up there? No. If there was, I'd know them. I still read magazines. Don't talk to me about the Foo Fighters. They're 50, they're 60 years old too. You know, in rock today, you're young if you're 60. But here's just in the last few months, and this is why I'm bringing this up now, because it's becoming very obvious that we're getting close now. You know, these people have, you know, McCartney, Keith Richards, Ringo Starr, Mick Jagger, Pete Townsend, Roger Daltrey, Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, Billy Joel, Barry Manilow, all these big stars from the 60s and 70s. They're still out there. They're still drawing crowds. Their talents have diminished. Their voices have gotten thinner and leaner. There's a lot of talk singing going on. But they've been able to physically put themselves together. They've cobbled themselves together. And they get out there. And they perform enough that their diehard fans are just happy to see them. And it's a love fest. And the fans are willing to accept some of the croaks and the missed notes and the kind of slower versions of the songs. It's like, I remember going to a concert and saying, this song just sounds slower. I mean, even though it's a fast song, it sounds slower to me. Then I realized, well, you know why? Because the people up on the stage are all in their late 70s who are performing it. But just in the last several months, as I said, if you buy a concert ticket today, There's no guarantee that you're going to see that show. Paul Simon, for instance. About 2 or 3 years ago, he announced he was done touring because he had some major hearing loss. Lost total hearing in one of his ears, and he could not perform. Couldn't hear the band, couldn't hear his own voice. He could not keep in time. It was just, you know, couldn't do it. He went to many ear specialists. He wound up finding somebody that could help them. He also found a way, or I guess some engineer that was able to help his hearing by the placement of the speakers or whatever. So he recorded a new album about a year ago or so. Of course, about mortality. What else are you going to write about when you're 82 or 83 years old? And all of a sudden, he announced this year, he's coming back on tour, playing smaller venues. The reviews have been all very, very complimentary. But at the same time, they can't help but say, well, it was a very small and quiet and whispering and intimate show. I think that was a kind way of saying that Paul Simon's voice is not as strong as it used to be. But hey, he's Paul Simon. He's a legend, and he's out there. And there's a great appreciation and respect for that. And I get it. And he's been going across the country, played shows here in Chicago, just played New York recently. But now I just read a couple of weeks ago that he has to cancel the tour. He's supposed to perform in Philadelphia, apparently, as part of this tour and continue it for the next couple of months. And he's got severe back pain. He has to get some kind of a medical procedure. I mean, yeah. That's reality. Rod Stewart has a residency in Las Vegas. All of a sudden, he canceled the last 4 or 5 shows of that. He performed at the Glastonbury Outdoor Festival here in England just like last week or so, and so he had that's a major, you know, gig, and so he definitely, I don't know what he had. They said he had a flu. I don't know if flu takes that long, so who knows what was going on. But he basically didn't do any more of those Vegas shows to rest up and get well, because this Glastonbury gig was going to be broadcast all over the UK, and it's a huge reputational show to play Glastonbury now. And the reviews I heard from that was that Rod's voice was very weak. The crowd was helping him sing. He still could sing some slow songs, but, you know, those rockers were pretty tough. Rod Stewart had a raspy voice when he was 20. 60 years later, he's still out there, still singing. I give him credit. Don't get me wrong. But he had to cancel shows to rest up for these. Billy Joel had a huge tour lined up. Canceled shows through next year. He's got some kind of a brain disorder. I don't know if he's going to die, but he had a fall during a concert. And it turned out it was, related to this fall. This condition he had, got some kind of a brain disorder he's got to work out. Real health problems. You know, last year, Ringo Starr is aging amazingly. He's 85. I think he's having a birthday this week. 85. And the guy looks great. He's still jumping around. He still does jumping jacks on stage. But if you look at him close, he's finally starting to, he's got a hairpiece, he dyes his hair and everything. He's still in great shape physically, but he's 85 years old. 85. So yeah, there's an amazing nostalgia. There's only 2 Beatles left. And so the Beatles were so important. So anybody will, even if Ringo doesn't sing all that many songs, he's got his all-star band helping him out. Doesn't sing all that many songs, but it's a Beatle. And there's only 2 left. And they're in their 80s. I recently heard Paul McCartney joined Bruce Springsteen for a concert in Liverpool to sing a couple of songs during the encore. Look, I love Paul McCartney. You can't. The guy's a genius. He's a legend. They'll be talking about Paul McCartney 500 years from now. But his voice is shot, at least in a concert setting. In the studio, with some rest, it might be okay. But in a concert setting, it's shot. It's not a shot. It's not a knock against him. He's 82, 83 years old. It's natural. But the fans went wild when he went out there and sang a couple of songs. It's a Beatle. But age is really starting to show. Bruce Springsteen's sideman, Steve Van Zandt, they're on this tour in Europe. All of a sudden, he has emergency surgery for appendicitis. Misses 2 or 3 shows. Springsteen himself, this tour that he just finished this summer in Europe was basically makeup shows for last year when he had a major ulcer problem and had to cancel 3 or 4 months of this tour. So he redid it now. But he had to cancel the rest of the tour and rest for 6 months. He had a major ulcer. Ozzy Osbourne's doing a final show with Black Sabbath. He's got Parkinson's disease. There's a guy from Traffic named Dave Mason. Boom. He had to cancel the rest of his tour. Elton John is almost blind in one eye. You know, he announced his retirement. He still, does a couple of concerts and corporate things and charity shows. But you could see he's slowing down. His voice is better than ever when I've heard some of these because he's not singing every day now. But, I saw Neil Young had to cancel some shows of his last year. Sting, who's in great shape. Everybody talks about he does Pilates and yoga and tantric yoga and all this stuff, and he is in great shape, but he's in his late 60s. He had to cancel many shows. It's just reality. It's just mortality, and it's really starting to happen now. We're losing people. We just lost Brian Wilson. There was a pop star named Bobby Sherman who was 81 years old. These people are in their 80s now. That's a long life. We're lucky that they've been around this long, but I think in the next 5 years now, we're going to see some major names either pass away or at least fade from the scene. Because they just won't have it anymore. But all of a sudden now you're seeing shows canceled due to illness. Show canceled due to illness. What's ironic in the rock world is, and it happens with everybody, always be careful when you're young. Always be careful of what you rebel against. Always be careful what you criticize when you're young, especially if it's something older. Because I guarantee you, take it from somebody who's been there, you're destined to become it. The funny thing is that when the rock stars were in their teens and 20s and even their 30s, they would laugh at the Dean Martins and Frank Sinatras and Andy Williamses and people like that who were still performing in their 70s and 80s, for smaller people and smaller groups, but they were still out there and they were joking. And I remember Elton, when he was in his 20s, making a comment at the height of his powers. Elton said, look, he would say 25, 27. He said, well, look, I don't want to be some 45-year-old playing all my hits in Vegas, making a little shot at the Frank Sinatras, the Jack Joneses, those older generational stars, your Tony Bennett's. What the hell, he was into his 90s when he was still performing. But that was viewed in the rock world like, I don't want to be some old man. They viewed 45 as old. The irony now is They're almost twice that age, and they won't get off the stage. Just like those other performers would not want to get off that stage until they physically couldn't. And now the rock stars who once scoffed and laughed and put them down are doing the same thing. I've always said, in show business, nobody retires. The performer never retires from show business. The business retires you, in many cases. It will cast you aside, in many cases. But no performer ever retires. You know, back in the 70s, Frank Sinatra turned 65. And, you know, especially in those days, when you turn 65, you're supposed to retire. That was, I mean, now you hear about retirement all different ages, but there, you know, back in those days, it was like 65, you were officially old, and in many cases you still are, but you were officially old and you retired. And so Frank Sinatra literally retired because he said, well, I'm 65, I guess I'm supposed to retire. Well, that didn't last long, and don't forget, he was singing until he was in his late 70s, early 80s, when the poor guy had dementia, forgetting the words to songs. He wouldn't leave the stage. Performers never retire. The business retires you, but they never retire. If they have a chance to come back, even if they haven't done anything in 40 years, if someone comes up to them and says, hey, do you want to do it? Yes. And that's what the rock and roll stars who once laughed and scoffed at all these older, in quotes, performers that were still hanging around in there. Elton was right. He wasn't a 45-year-old who went to Vegas and played his hits. No. He was in his 60s when he did it. And his 70s. He was still playing his hits in Vegas. And had some of the most successful residencies in Vegas. But he did it. Times change, attitudes change, perspectives change when they suddenly apply to you. Rock and roll has constantly had a chip on its shoulder. Rock and roll is here to stay. Long live rock. Many of those practitioners are proving that. But we're starting to see the sad results of it. I've been to so many concerts, but I have to say, over the last few years, I was still going to see many of my favorite performers. Most of my favorite performers are many years now on Social Security. And, you know, you have to pay a lot of money for tickets now, especially if you want to sit close. And I haven't been to a concert now in quite a while. And it's because it's cool to see them there. As I said, we're willing to pay to be in the same room with them. But I saw most of those people in their primes 30, 40 years ago. And I watch them now, and it's great to see them, and it's great respect that they're out there still doing it the best they can. But what was so exciting and so exhilarating and why it became such an important part of my life was because of the energy and the commitment and the passion and the youthful spirit that they had and the commitment. And that commitment's there, but it's different. And they were at the height of their creative powers. And now when I see them, I hear the bad notes. I hear the talk singing. I notice the tempos of the songs are slower. I notice the running around and pure fanatical energy and frenetic energy that happened on the stage is gone. There's a lot of motions, but there's not a lot of energy. If you're a good performer, you know the tricks to make it look like you're really expending a lot of energy, but you're really conserving it. And so I've gone to some of these concerts and I've traveled and I've spent money and then I got there and it was like, Yeah, it's great to see them. And there's moment, and there's flashes. They can still, they every so often there's one song that they'll nail, and it's like, wow, it's just like 1975, or it's just like 1985, or it's even like 1995. But over a 2 hour or 2.5 hour period, it just can't be sustained. And I miss that. And I think back of what I had, and I've been battling, do I want to keep my memories of that exhilarating time still pure, or do I want to feel some nostalgia and even see a couple last glimpses of it before it's gone forever? And it's a tough call. You know, it really is. But as I said, you're seeing Paul Simon getting back surgery, and Billy Joel having brain disorders, and Ozzy Osbourne having Parkinson's disease. And, Chrissy Hynde made a comment. She said, they're probably not going to have outdoor shows anymore because it's too hot for the performers. Would Chrissy Hynde, the Pretenders, ever said that in 1975? She would have laughed if she heard someone say that. So we're coming to that time, folks. We better get ready. For those of us who have lived and breathed and loved rock and roll for literally all of our lives, our heroes are leaving us both permanently, or at least from their stage, and mortality is hitting. And we better get ready, because we're going to see some major talents that will be gone forever. And it will be interesting how they are remembered. As I said, Brian Wilson, yeah, there was some talk about him, but 2 or 3 weeks later, I don't hear anybody talking about Brian Wilson anymore. So it'll be interesting to see when Paul Simon and Mick Jagger and some of these other people that have defined rock and roll, Robert Plant. I mean, look at Robert Plant. You know, he gets a lot of flack for not reuniting with Led Zeppelin. But it's clear. The guy can't. I give him credit, because he could go to the bank and make a shitload of money. Oops. And have tapes playing, or people in the background helping. But you know how hard it is to sing those Led Zeppelin songs? They're all screamers. He doesn't want to diminish the memory of what Led Zeppelin was. I give him credit, because Jimmy Page is going crazy over there saying we could be making millions. But Robert Plant has a commitment to the integrity of the band. You know, the musicians, they can still play to some extent, but those singers, those voices, those are precious, precious instruments. So I give Robert Plant a lot of credit, because they could easily, you know, go out on tour, stand out there. They could have backtracks playing. Nobody would know. He could be lip syncing, and the place would go crazy, and they could make hundreds of millions of dollars. But he says no. And that's the kind of the question we're at now. Do we continue to support these legends, or do we say, you know what? We want to keep the memory alive of when it really was at its peak. It's a tough call. We all succumb to nostalgia. We all love to recreate those times of our youth. But there's no doubt that rock and roll definitely has an expiration date. I've said that before. And now we're seeing that rock and roll may not be here forever. It may not be here to stay. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there.
And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 476. I'm Jim Tirano. I am here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your screen. Hope I die before I get old. Rock and roll.